Okay, hello everyone. Sorry for the delay, and we are going to start now. And today I want to tell you about my project this summer on cosmic string with my supervisor, Louis Leblanc. And so first, we will give you some motivation, tell you what a cosmic string is and where they come from. And then we will talk about the dynamics of a cosmic string, and in particular, their cusp formation and why we care about them and how to model them. And finally, we will give you some numerical result we did this summer. First, I want to tell you what a cosmic string is. It's a kind of topological defect which may arise when there is a phase transition in your system. Other topological defects include domain wall and monopole. The different kinds of defect you get depends on the symmetry that is broken in your phase transition. We will start by talking about domain wall because they are the simplest and easiest to visualize. So, okay, a domain wall. You get a domain wall when you break a discrete symmetry. So, for example, here you get a potential as a function of your field phi, and your potential is left-right invariant, and you get two local minima, and plus and minus. And so, for example, when your system cools down, it undergoes a phase transition, and the system has to fall onto either of the local minima, here and here. And you may think that it would be nice if the whole system fall into one particular minima, say plus, but it doesn't make sense in a cosmological setting because the universe is big, and at like two different regions separated by a large distance, one region shouldn't know what happened in the other region. So it's by relativity, we don't want one region to know instantaneously what is happening in the other region. So we would expect, like, over large distance in our universe, there would be both regions choosing the plus minima and the region with choosing the minus minima. And so we are separating our universe into a different cells here, here, plus and minus. Now that you get two different choices, then you always have a boundary in between. And what we call a domain wall is the boundary in time between the different choices of minima. And because of continuity, you have plus and minus. Somewhere in between, your field has to settle on zero, and that is the peak of your potential. And that gives you a high energy density on your domain wall, and that is why people want to study them. So in spirit, a topological defect is just the boundary between the region with a different choices of minima. So this domain wall is nice and simple. And the next level would be a cosmic string, which is what we like to study. Here, instead of having a scalar field, you are having a complex scalar field with a whole circle of degenerate minima. And so as before, when your system cools down, you get a phase transition. At each point in your system, you have to fall into one of the local minimum. And effectively, you are picking up a phase in your system. And the same argument as before, over large distance, the choice of minimum should be independent with like other region. So that means you can, in your universe, you can pick a circle that actually wrap around the whole circle of minima in your phase space. And here is one of the circle. And now that you get a non-trivial winding of your potential, then you can imagine shrinking your circle here. And then by the same argument of continuity, somewhere in the middle, you will have to get to the top of your potential. And that high energy density in the one-dimensional defect is what you call a cosmic string. Okay, having told you what a cosmic string is, I want to say a few words why we are interested in studying them. So as we said earlier, they are formed in the phase transition of early universe. So they provide us a link to study the physics of a very early universe. And and cosmic string has some other nice feature. They may provide us with some density fluctuation to give us a seed for galaxy formation. And also, a string moving in space-time corresponds to a minimal surface that is somewhat interesting in differential geometry. So we want to study them. And so you may ask, how do we even try to look for a cosmic string in an experiment? There are many ways, but one way that we are particularly interested in is looking for the gravitational wave signal. It turns out that when a cosmic string has a cusp on it, it gives out a sharp burst of gravitational wave that might be detected by some detector like the LIGO or the next generation LISA. And so what is a cusp? At this point, you may just think of it as some sort of a singularity on your curve that is not due to a self-intersection of the two parts of your curve. So for example, here you can write down a curve like RS is S squared S cubed. And look at the parameterization, it's perfectly smooth. But when you plot it at the origin there, it's a singularity. This is this kind of singularity that we are interested in. We call them a cusp. And unfortunately, we haven't seen a cosmic string in experiment yet. But LIGO are looking for signal from a cosmic string cusp. And here is a sensitivity plot of their search, and where here C is the average number of cusp per oscillation of your cosmic string. Since we are looking for cosmic string from their cusp, it makes sense that if there are more cusp per oscillation, it should be easier to find them. And indeed, this plot is telling us the same thing. So for C equal to 1 compared to C equal to 0, the amplitude of your gravitational wave signal would be higher, and that makes it easier to look for C1. And this motivates our main question of this project: how do we better model cusp formation in cosmic string? So with a better estimate for C, we will have a better idea how likely or unlikely the next physics run for LIGO will see a cosmic string. And if they don't see one, then we will have a better exclusion of the parameter space of in the cosmic string models. So it's the main question that we are interested in. And to answer this kind of question, first we will need to study the dynamics of a cosmic string moving around in space-time. Yes. And so since a cosmic string moving in space-time will trace out a two-dimensional surface, we are using tau and sigma to parameterize such a surface. And just like you are using the length as the action for a relativistic particle, pawn particle, we are using the area as the action for such a surface. And it's the so-called Nambu-Goto action. And so as I said, like a string moving in space-time would be a two-dimensional surface. And because the action is the area, minimizing the area gives you a minimum surface, as I told you before, why it's interesting mathematically. And also because the action is just the area, so it is invariant under reparameterization. So if you change the form you're writing your x mu, you actually get the same action. So this gives us the freedom to choose fixed gauge and to simplify our equation of motion. Okay, so we want to find the equation of motion from the action. As always, you take the first variation and then do some integration by part and then kill the boundary term. And here is what you get. And you set this guy to 0, and then you write it out, and then it's your equation of motion. And as you can see, it's somewhat messy, and later on for the next two slides, we'll fix the gate so that it's somewhat more manageable. The first gauge choice we would like to impose is the so-called temporal gauge, and it's just saying that the time component of your x mu should be the physical time. Is a very natural choice because you're modeling a string moving in time anyway. And we will call the spatial part tau as a function of tau and sigma. And here we are identifying tau with the physical time t. And our next choice would be the orthogonal gauge. It's motivated when we want to study the velocity of a pawn on the string. So somehow we would like to say tau dot the time derivative of your spatial vector should correspond to the velocity of your string. But it's unfortunately not true because in general your L dot will have a component that is tangent to your string. And that part is not physical, and we want to get rid of that. And that is how you define your transverse velocity. It's L dot minus the component that is tangent to your string. But this looks bad, and we want to get rid of this part. And that's why we set our gauge such that this dot product vanishes. And here is our gauge. And to show you that we can actually choose that, you can actually reparameterize your string, and the F, you have to solve a linear transport equation. But we know that the solution exists, so it's all we need, and we can choose this gauge. Having done that, having fixed the gauge, we can work through the equation of motion, and then the spatial part will simplify a lot, and then we are just getting the wave equation. It's quite neat. And if you look at the time component, you are getting a constraint, which is kind of like a conservation law. It's just saying that the square norm of the derivative of R has to be a constant, then we may as well set it to 1. And also, because we are interested in studying closed string, so we may as well we put by hand periodic boundary condition. So this part is what we will be using for the second half of the talk. And because we are only getting the wave equation as the equation of motion, we know how to solve the wave equation. It's just given by superposition of the left mover and the right mover. And so you can write down R explicitly like this. And if you plug this back into your constraint, you will see that it's just saying that both A and B has, A prime and B prime has to be of unit length. And a somewhat useful way to think about this constraint would be, yes?
You mean A is a function?
A is just a single variable function. And you are putting it tau plus sigma.
It's a function, and it's not that A times
A is a function.
Okay.
Sorry. So A is a function, and then you take its derivative, and then they has to be of unit length. And a somewhat useful way to visualize this constraint would be to plot it on a sphere. And people have given it a fancy name, Kibble-Torok sphere. I don't know why, but it's actually, as it turns out later when we study cusp, this sphere is very useful in understanding the cusp formation. So in this talk, we will always use red for the left mover and blue for the right mover. And here you are just plotting it as a function. So I just told you line is a function. So you trace out a curve in the sphere. And before moving on, let me show you some animation of different kinds of cosmic string. So let's get to mathematics. Over the years, people have written down different kinds of explicit solutions for a cosmic string, and let me show you some of them. Okay. So here is a particular family of solutions, which has two free parameters, alpha and phi, and let it run first. Okay, so it is how a cosmic string will move in space-time, in space. Now we are moving time forward. And as you can see, it's not very simple. And okay, you can stop it and then change the parameter. It will change the shape of the cosmic string. So as you can see, okay, if you move alpha around, it will be more rounded and for small alpha and more spiky for large alpha, and then you can also move phi around. Okay, it's this kind of cosmic string that we are studying, and there are, you can write down more complicated example as people did. So this one for the left mover, we put the first and the third harmonics on it, and then for the right mover, we only have the first harmonics. And okay, for this family, you have like three parameters, and you can set it, and we can study like some distribution of property over this kind of family of solutions. And there are more, but yeah. One neat example is this. A rigidly rotating string. So here you see a cusp just moving around, and then we will be studying this kind of thing after. Okay. Let's get back to the PDF. I hope those animations give you some sort of intuition about cosmic strength. And here is the same thing, just in case Mathematica doesn't work. And also you can see that, like, you write down this in this form is not particularly simple. So a lot of the work has to be done numerically. Okay, finally, okay, so the next part I would like to talk about cusp formation. That is the stuff that we are mostly interested in. So I told you a cusp is just a kind of singularity on the curve of the cosmic string. And it turns out there are some other properties that makes it special. The most important thing is that they are moving at the speed of light, and the curvature diverges. It makes sense because it's just a spike. So to see why that is true, we have to understand more why when a cusp occurs. And it turns out that a cusp corresponds exactly to an intersection of A prime and B prime on the cubotoroid sphere. And that's why this form is a useful way to think about cosmic string, as I said. So here you get an intersection, A prime of U is equal to B prime of V, and then you can take the time derivative, and then it will just be A prime because they are the same. So this means that the cosmic string is moving at the speed of light because, as I said, A prime is of unit length. Also, the sigma derivative will vanish because they cancel each other. Okay, now the sigma derivative is zero, and then we Taylor expand it in terms of sigma. And the first term will vanish because this guy is zero, and then now you get a second derivative and a third derivative. And if they are both non-zero and they are not collinear, then we get a cusp. So for example, if the two vector is just the x and the y axis, then you can write down locally the cosmic string as something like s cubed and s squared. And then you can plot this, and then it is precisely what you call a cusp. Okay, this example is kind of a canonical example of a cusp. All the cusps look similar to this. So I told you about the LIGO search for cosmic string from cusp and gravitational wave burst. And their sensitivity is depending a lot on the number of cusp per oscillation. And that's why we want to model this number C. And also because the string evolution is fairly complicated, so we have to use numerical method. And in the next part of the talk, I will show you how we try to model this kind of behavior. Before we go into the program, we want to rephrase our problem a little bit first. So we are finding intersection of A prime and B prime, which is basically a root finding problem. Would be a somewhat useful way to think about it would be to phrase it as a minimization problem. So we want to minimize the square distance of A prime and B prime. So here is the function, and then we want to minimize it. Just give you an example, here is a cosmic string, and we have like a few intersections, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so we plot the contour plot for F, and then we do indeed get like 6 local minima. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So counting the number of cusps is equivalent to counting the number of local minima. And is what we are going to do in our program. So to do a numerical minimization, there are many different methods. And the simplest tool would be the gradient descent and the Newton's method. For gradient descent, you're just starting at a point, and you compute the gradient, and then you move in the opposite direction. And so you are moving downhill every time, and hopefully you will converge to a local minima. And the Newton's method, I think you guys are familiar with like finding root using the Newton's method. And here you are just using it to find the zero of your gradient. That would correspond to a local minimum. So more fancy methods exist, and they are usually just improvement over these two methods. So here is how we do our cusp counting. So for each particular family of string solution, we will simulate a number of solutions, and then for each string, we will throw in some random point in the UV space, like the parameter for A prime and B prime, and then run our minimization procedure, find all the local minimum, and then we count how many of them that are below a certain cutoff. So for example, if we get the distance to be below 0.001, then we call it a cusp. And then after that, we average over the number of cusps in the family. Then we get an idea how many cusps there are in that family of cosmic string solution. Okay, now I can show you some results. To test that our program is working kind of reasonably, we start with the simplest kind of solution, a cuspless string. People have figured out how to write a string that has no cusp. And we fit this in our program, and then we get a sharp zero. And that is good. And the next simplest one would be just two great circles moving around, and almost all of the time they should be intersecting two times. And we fit this in our program, and then we're getting two. Now we can do something slightly less trivial. The CDX string I showed you before, having the first and the third harmonics on the left mover, and the first harmonics on the right mover here, and then we fit this in our program, and then we are already getting something rather complicated. Like 30% of the string will have two cusps, and 70% of them will have six, with an average of around five cusps. And we can add the third harmonics to the right mover as well, and then we are getting even something more complicated. It's already like some non-trivial pattern here, and take the average, we get around six cusps. We believe that the message here is that LIGO search might have been too conservative with their estimate for the number of cusps per oscillation. And so we ask if it's still true if we add extra dimension to our model. It turns out that extra in three spatial dimension and four spatial dimension is quite different. So to see why, it's expected that two smooth curves in S3 shouldn't intersect. The intuitive argument is that now you need to solve three equations, but you only have 2 degrees of freedom, the U and the V. So it makes sense that they shouldn't intersect in your S3 is just the three-dimensional hyperspeed. Like when you have a four-dimensional space and then you put one constraint, then that is just the S3. So we expect that in the presence of extra dimension, there shouldn't be any exact cusps anymore. And this motivates us to introduce the so-called near cusp effect, which is just a name for a cusp that is rounded at the spike. We also introduce a parameter delta to quantify how close a near cusp effect resembles an exact cusp. So here, the smaller the delta is, the more near you are to an exact cusp. If delta is zero, then you are actually having an intersection. That would mean you are having an exact cusp. So we can run our program in cosmic string solution with extra dimensions, and then here's the result. So here we are plotting the cumulative distribution function for the number of near cusp effect for the CDX string in 3, 4, and 5 dimensions. So the curve is telling you at each particular delta how many near cusp effect has the local minimum with less than that delta. In particular, the y-axis would just be the number of exact cusps. And so for example, in 3D, we are having like 5 exact cusps, recovering what we got previously. But as soon as you change from 3D to 4D, the change is quite dramatic. You actually kill all the exact cusps. And it's not just some special effect on this kind of family. We can write down some other solutions, say having the fifth harmonics, and the same qualitative effect is just here. In 4D and 5D, there are no exact cusps at all. So if there is extra dimension in the universe, it may be much harder to detect a cosmic string than LIGO thought. If they are compactified, it depends on the ratio of the width of your cosmic string and the size of the extra dimension. We try a little bit of that, and then it doesn't change too much. It's still no exact cosmic. So, we can run our program on different count of string, and it's a summary of the plot. So you can see it is quite generally true that when you include extra dimension, all the cups are killed. And in 3D, you have a number of exact cups, but not anymore with extra dimensions. Okay, one last thing I want to tell you about the string dynamics is that what happens when they cross each other. So in general, they will intercommute, meaning that they will exchange end with the other string. For example, here you are having two strings crossing each other. And after that, you will be getting something like this, like they will connect with the other one on top and then on the bottom, and then we will form a loop in between. And a string can also intercommute with itself and spitting out a loop. And so this motivates our next model of cosmic string. We imagine like a cosmic string loop forming from like intersection of a few long cosmic string, and then this kind of cosmic string from four intersecting cosmic string. And here the loop would be somewhat piecewise linear, it looks, and it makes it easier to model because they are piecewise linear, and it also matched the numerical simulation from some other work. So because they are piecewise linear, well, it will be like on the Hilbert-Torok sphere for the A prime and B prime would be like a pure jump function. Because here the A prime and B prime would just be constant, 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 and then a large jump across the prong. And how we model them is we will throw some random pawn on your sphere and then connect them by the shorter geodesic and run our program and then see how many cups there are. So what we get in 3D is confirming our previous observation. There is, in general, a number of cusps for cosmic string moving in 3D. But as soon as you go to four spatial dimension, all the cusps are gone, and you are getting like a zero intersect here. So the red curve is the 3D string and the blue one is the 4D, and you can see it is dropping quite a lot. So just to wrap up, we have studied the cusp formation in cosmic string, and in particular we try to have a better estimate for the number of cusps per oscillation in cosmic string models. And so our message is that in 3D, LIGO may have been too conservative with their estimate for the number of cusps per oscillation, but if we include extra dimension, it may be much harder to detect a cosmic string than what they previously thought. And as you said, we can also consider like putting a potential in the extra dimension to try to compactify this kind of to try to constrain the movement of your cosmic string in the extra dimension, We try this, and then for a range of parameter, it doesn't usually make much difference. Like for the most reasonable model, the width of a cosmic string is much smaller than the size of the extra dimension anyway, so it will be kind of like an infinite size and for the extra dimension. And so, thank you.
At the beginning, you talked about when you defined the cosmic strings. You talked about the potential,
uh-huh.
Which was 5.4. potential.
Yes.
What is physically potential? Is it related to...
That is just the abelian hex model. Like in most...
Sorry?
That is just the abelian hex model. Like when you have a hex in your in standard model, then this kind of potential is what you use. And that is, I thought, is somehow people choose this kind of potential.
This is the standard potential, although the one in the standard model in particular, you can show that if, when you go through the electric phase transition in the universe, the X field, which we haven't seen yet, but assuming the X is there and it has a potential like we think it has, then there will be a phase transition, defects will get more. For the particular potential of the standard model, the defects are actually less. But if you just because there is this, it's more complicated. But I guess the message is just this cosmic string. Actually, it's very, very easy to make models which will have cosmic strings. So in fact, they already have been observed in condensed matter, and they're cosmic in the sense that they're way, way bigger than the electron, the millimeter is supposed to. So yes, it's actually, but it's very model dependent on what the potential is. It does have to be just.
Is there any potential in the standard model to produce?
Is there so the problem though is because the standard model is SU2 plus U1. And so if it was just so it has an edge, it has the weak force. If it was just U1, then it would work. So it's not so much the potential. That's why the potential is not so important. It's more the symmetry gradient. So but there are extensions of the standard model which will have in fact like for example grand unified theory.
There's an analogy of the cosmic string if you break a different gauge form. So if you break SU2, then if there's an energy in the
form.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to answer that?
No, oh, sure. Go ahead.
I think you mentioned it at the beginning, right?
Yeah. What do you?
So the question was, so the cosmic strings are produced if you break U1.
Uh-huh.
If you break some other gauge form, say SU2, for example, what do you get?
That's the
geometric. I think you would get some other defect, maybe the monopole, is it?
I think it's the only effect. Essentially, the only difference between the defects is their dimension, their co-dimension. So you can get Dunning wall, you can get cosmic string, you can get monopole, and I guess you can get hints on top of it. SU2 does not give hints on top. Sorry, they can't give monopole.
Mm-hmm.
SU3.
Okay, thank you.
More questions?
You have to get rid of this. I don't know how to use this.